Every month we get to meet people whose individual stories are intertwined with the story of the region. Stories of Southern Oregon are compiled by Maureen Flanagan Battistella for the Southern Oregon Digital Archive, SODA, at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University. This month, Maureen is back in the studio with a fairly frequent guest who had a backstory we just did not know. Dr. Jim Shames is the Chief Medical Officer for Jackson County Health and Human Services. He was here just last week talking about the air. He and wife Heidi Parker, who works on homeless services in the Rogue Valley, met while providing health care to hippies seeking to drop out of society in the Illinois Valley in the early 70s. So, Jim Shames, welcome back.
Thank you, Jeff. Good to be here.
Heidi Parker, good to see you in the studio.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Maureen Flanagan Battistella, as always, good to have you back here.
Thank you, Jeff.
So just from the very beginning, Heidi, where did you come from originally?
Well, as it pertains to this story, I was born and raised in California, and during the late 60s, early 70s, there was a huge anti-war movement to protest the ongoing, seemingly never-ending war in Vietnam. There was a huge disconnect between parents and children at that time in this country, and I was part of the massive protests in San Francisco and Berkeley. And at some point in the early 70s, I decided, as the protests got more and more violent and the war continued to stretch on, that I was going to leave the country. And I prepared to head north, and in an old pickup that I got from my grandfather. And as I got to the Oregon-California border, there was a hitchhiker that I picked up who suggested that there was a small community in Southern Oregon called Takilma, and that if I would drive him there, he thought I might enjoy visiting that place. And so I did. And once we got there, there was a small little farming community that had been inundated by hippies all over. People were dropping out from all over the country in protest to the war and what the government was doing.
So very similar to the reasons that you had come up.
Yes. And so I got there, and there were a couple of hundred people who had dropped out from the larger society. And I really enjoyed being there. At the same time, there were signs in the local community stores and businesses, we do not solicit hippie patronage. So we were not allowed to go into many of the businesses. There was, after being there for many months, a lot of people started getting sick. People were camped out in small cabins and camping alongside the Illinois River. We had outhouses close to the river. We didn't have a lot of knowledge about how we should build these alternative communities at that point in time.
Didn't have a Whole Earth catalog, didn't have
Well, that came fire a little later. So a number of people got sick, and we went to the local health department in Grants Pass, the nearest health facility to Takilma. And we were basically refused service. They said, you're already sick. There's nothing we can do. And ultimately, when the number of cases of hepatitis A grew to over 100, the state epidemiologist from Portland came down in a mobile health van and went door to door and explained to people. They had handouts of where to build your outhouse so that it wasn't too close to the river, how to boil water that you got from the river. And they also did a little mini clinic of giving gamma globulin shots to this small community of hippies.
Get you back on track anyway.
Yes.
We're talking to Heidi Parker and Dr. Jim Shames in Stories of Southern Oregon about their experiences in Takilma in the early 70s. And so Jim Shames, I understand you were not on that original trip that came down to help the people with the hepatitis A outbreak, but you heard about it back in Portland.
Right. So my background was a bit different than Heidi's. Kind of upper middle class, East Coast. But, you know,
go on, say it. Uptight. I'm from the East Coast, too.
but, you know, I was swept up in the whole something's wrong in this country, and I want to figure out a different way of doing things. And so, you know, that was my medical slant, is that, gosh, we really could improve the medical care in this country. I was on my way being a psychiatrist. I was already lined up with OHSU. I kind of took a medical gap year, they're not too common. And I was in Portland doing kind of odd medical jobs for the public health in Multnomah County, heard about this little community that was wanting to, as part of their self-sufficiency, create their own healthcare system. I thought, wow, I can follow up on the stuff I've been thinking about and come down and help them out, which I did. And I met Heidi early on in that and essentially met with a group of community folks who said, we want to create our own clinic. And I said, if you can find a building and find some people to staff it.
So you had a few demands.
Just a few, that we could do this. And we did. We just started from scratch and created a clinic.
So from what I assume is a fairly starchy kind of world at OHSU, I mean, how different was Tacoma? What was the get to know you like phase in Tacoma?
Well, when I first got there, it was kind of, you know, it was foreign, but I could resonate with the personality of the folks and the philosophies and quickly kind of found my people, other folks who were kind of intellectuals in their background and dropped out. But over time, when it became time for me to go back to OHSU and finish my residency, which I did not do, that was the crazy-making time. That was the, you know, you have a life path, you thought you knew where you're headed. If you get off that and become a small town doctor, that's a really different choice. And so that was a pretty confusing time, but once I embraced it, and I never looked back.
So what kinds of healthcare needs did people, once I assume the hepatitis outbreak subsided once people got their gamma globulin shots and learned how to boil water before they drank it right out of the river and that sort of thing?
It did, but it was a wake-up call for those of us in the community because we said, okay, well, how are we going to take care of ourselves? If we're recreating a society that didn't work for us, how are we going to do it? Medical care. So we had Merck manuals, Merck veterinary animals handbooks, because we all had goats and cows and horses and as part of the farming component. But we decided we needed to know more about how our bodies worked.
Wait. So you had the manuals for the animals?
For the animals. Well, we had Merck manuals for people as well. But there were some gaps there in our knowledge, and so we came together at a community meeting and decided we really needed to learn how to take care of our bodies. Also, at the same time, there was sort of a similar thing happening with healthcare around birthing. Women had gotten very disillusioned with the practices of how to deliver babies. And had decided, even if I don't know how to deliver my baby myself, I'm not going to go to a hospital.
Because the hospital, I understand, the partners couldn't be there.
The partners couldn't be attendant at the birth. Women were routinely shaved. There was only one position on your back that you could deliver babies in. And there was a huge protest to those practices. So after the state epidemiologist went back to Portland and told Jim about what was happening down here, he came down and met with the community. And from the start, we knew he only had about 6 months. But as he said, in 6 months, I'm going to tell you everything I know about healthcare and how bodies work.
Because
and
at that point, Jim, you thought you were going to finish your residency, right?
Yes.
I hadn't even started yet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. That's right. No, I thought I knew where I was going, and this was going to be a little interlude. Mm-hmm. It turned out to be my life.
So what do you remember I have to believe a lot of this had to do with Heidi and meeting Heidi, and you, the description from the earlier interview that Maureen did with you was that you sort of circled each other for a while.
Yes.
We did. We first met at a birth. It was like my first day there. I'd seen a half a dozen births in my training, and this was somebody in a school bus, and I had no idea about prenatal care, and so it was trial by fire for sure. Yeah, Heidi and I met, and then it became clear to me that birthing was going to be a major part of the work that was going to be done here, and we got to know each other and moved on.
Jim Shames and Heidi Parker were working at the Takelma People's Clinic many years ago in the Illinois Valley, and they are this month's Stories of Southern Oregon. They're in the studio with Maureen Flanagan Battistella, who compiles the series.
Yeah, and I've got a question for y'all. It came up earlier that you were a magnet town for healthcare, that there were many collectives in that area, and you were the center for healthcare. So that told me that, A, there were a lot of people out there in alternative communities. B, there were a lot of healthcare problems and lack of delivery or no access, and that they came. How did all that work? Was it barter? Was it – how did those outsiders kind of
– That was my next question. How did people pay you?
we started with the fundamental principle that healthcare is a right and not a privilege, and this is a poor community. This is before the Affordable Care Act. Very few people had insurance. People paid what they could. So, we did get barter and occasionally got a little bit of money, and we were living off the land and didn't really need much. We had a lot of volunteer help. And for those in the community who wanted to participate, they could spend the night at the clinic, keep the fires going, keep the place clean, get it all ready for the next day, answer the only telephone in town. And that was sort of a prepaid healthcare plan. And so that was another way that people could kind of, compensate for their care.
So like a primary care subscription in a sense.
Exactly.
It's the forerunner of today's services.
Right. We also had Monday night classes. So people would come from across, they'd wait across the river, and we'd all get together. And one week we would talk about the digestive system, and another week about how does the heart work. And as we were all participating in healthcare, we had people who had dropped out who were lab technicians, x-ray technicians, nurses. They didn't really have PAs back then, but many of the people who had been involved in the Takelma Clinic went on to receive degrees in nursing, physicians, medical degrees, and PAs and nurse practitioners. So it was, in addition to training many of us in the community, it provided a pipeline to future medical care. And we just were really convinced that the way medical care was being delivered in the broader country wasn't conducive to people really learning about disease and what was going wrong in their bodies. So we did a lot of patient education, a lot of education of ourselves. And Jim was a wonderful teacher. He had access to tools and resources that we didn't have. Additionally, in the broader community in Medford, when we had OB, we started an OB service. We had a birth mobile, and we would sometimes, I remember one birth that we packed our supplies in by mule on a mining claim.
Wow.
People were just everywhere. Women were having babies with no prior knowledge. So we started a prenatal.
And lots of them, it sounds like.
Lot of them.
Hundreds and hundreds.
And so we started a prenatal clinic, and women would come from Williams and Grants Pass and Wolf Creek, and they'd come to Takelma for their weekly prenatal visit, and we educated them about what supplies they would need to have on hand for birthing.
Over time, I mean, you talked about the broader community coming to you. So the word got out, and I have mm-hmm. to believe, too, that the people who might have resisted you at first, and, you know, we don't serve hippies here, that barrier might have broken down when they realized you guys knew what you were doing. Did it? I mean, did you get a greater acceptance from the community over time? Did the no hippies served here signs come down?
Well, there weren't a lot of people providing health care in the Illinois Valley. And for a while there, we were the only ones. We didn't charge people for services, so that breaks down a lot of barriers right there. And it was an interesting waiting room to sit in with, you know, hippies and you know, generational farmers and folks from here and there. Yeah.
How what was the peak? I mean, how many years after you guys opened the place did it seem to hit its peak of humming along and serving the maximum number of people?
Well, I think the fire, was it called the biscuit fire? No,
yeah,
it was the anyway.
We had a big fire in the community.
And we had to evacuate the clinic. So we moved the whole clinic to Cave Junction. And it became a federally qualified health center years after we started and started receiving federal funds. It still exists in Cave Junction, Grants Pass.
Yeah, Siskiyou Community Health Center is the clinic that grew from the Tacoma People's Clinic.
All right, so there's still some DNA of the original clinic.
There's the DNA.
So, but what is that like, though, when you look back now and consider the fact that here you were in Heidi's case in particular, you wanted nothing to do with the Vietnam War, with the federal government, you were going to go to Canada, and the clinic you worked at is now a federally recognized clinic.
Yeah. It's an amazing transition when you look at it in retrospect. At the time, all the same problems that exist now were happening then. And the climate, the political climate back then was very similar to what's happening now.
Very divided country.
The difference is having the internet really connects you to the rest of the country in a way that we were disconnected back then. So we didn't know that this whole process was happening all over the country. There were people dropping out. There was the farm in Tennessee. There were communes all over the Pacific Northwest and also in the Midwest and on the East Coast. It was a national movement that we didn't know existed until after the fact.
And so there were, what, three communes were there in Tacoma at that time?
Depends on your definition, really. There were lots and lots of different collectives of people experimenting with different ways of living. Some were bigger, some were smaller, some lasted 6 months, some still exist.
Did I hear the name right? One of them was called the Duda Collective?
Right.
But everybody took on names? From the
right,
yes.
Right. Suda and Luda. And
can you expand on that notion?
Well, I'm a little uncomfortable calling out individual communes where people still live, but the concept was that you know, people identified, and in this case, they kind of took the last name of the commune. You know, it was a time of great experimentation. You know, it's like we're going to recreate all the various aspects of society, and if you know, you can think about it. People were kind of looking at it afresh, like. Mm-hmm. What's law enforcement look like in a hippie community? What does healthcare look like? What do schools look like?
Right.
So a lot of things to reconsider to sort of recreate from the ground
up. We recreated a school and a clinic and a tree planters collective and a tree thinning collective that actually ended up having the land donated from Weyerhaeuser, I think it was, to build the school on. So we recreated some of the systems, and part of communal living was the concept of we're not privately owning this land, we're sharing it, and we're growing food together and having children that are raised.
It's tremendously empowering, you know, to feel the ownership of the things that are most critical to your life,
especially when you're doing them all together like that.
Exactly,
it's like playing in a band in a sense. You know, you have to pull together for the same melody.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how long before you guys ended up getting onto a more conventional track? You know, buying a home and having a family and all that stuff.
That was about 16, 17 years after we first met. The the impetus to move to Ashland was education. As our kids got older, the Dome School didn't go beyond elementary. And we, as our kids grew up and needed more stimulus, the city, the big city of Ashland,
drew us.
although there were many factors. I mean, living communally, at a certain point, you know, I felt ready to kind of move on. I didn't really need to ask permission to use the truck or, you know, have a meeting in order to figure out what I was going to plant. And so it seemed organically about the right time. Mm-hmm.
The tremendous gift of the whole experience was that we learned how to collaborate with other people, and that it was really important to ask the opinions and seek the advice of other people, that no one person knew it all. And it was really reestablished a sense of community and family, a chosen family and a chosen community that the places we came from didn't really inspire in us.
But this is something that stays with you for life. You learn how to work with other people, and it really helps you.
It's certainly the fundamentals of the way I do my work now. I genuinely want to know what everybody else is thinking. I know that we're going to have a stronger product if we can extract, you know, those ideas from others.
So it never hurt you to not go back and finish the residency, huh?
Wow, it's a long story.
Just a few seconds.
Yeah. No, somehow I became board certified in family medicine as well as addiction medicine, and I never to go back and do that residency.
All right. Jim Shames is now the medical director of Jackson County Health and Human Services. Heidi Parker was a midwife, is now helping homeless communities in Ashland. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about your story of Southern Oregon.
Thank you.
And Maureen Flanagan-Battistella, as always, thank you for curating this and putting the collection together.